Okay, about his availability.
Yes, I
do. Okay. And apparently he told somebody that he told Steve that he was planning to be here. So we'll just go ahead and get started. Because I tried calling him and he didn't answer. So I don't know. I have to drop my daughter off at the airport. I have to leave at 11. So I'd like to be done a few minutes before that, if possible. Okay. So we all set?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is Julie Fedorchak on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session for the Public Service Commission talking about case number PU-20-430. Participating today are myself, Commissioner Randy Christman, and staff member Brian Johnson, Adam Renfant, Pat Fawn, and we have Casey Fury from staff who's also in the room. I don't have any opening comments. Do you, Randy?
No, I do not. Thanks.
Okay, very good. I will just say I noted the company originally we had set April 5th for the proposed findings. They asked for an extension to April 12th. We have those now, and that's really what we're discussing. Is one provision in the proposed findings, as near as I can tell. So, with that. Adam, did you want to kind of lead things off, kick off the discussion about what we're meeting about today?
Sure. We are meeting on case number PU-20-430, and the company had sent over a proposed findings of fact, conclusion of law and order. At issue is order provision number 2. If you have that right now.
Page 7 of 8, right?
I believe so. I don't have it on my person. Yep. What they are proposing...
It is 7 of 8, and it does go on to page 8 by one sentence as well.
So. Okay.
What they're proposing is that they would like a routing deviation buffer of 40 feet from either side of the designated route. The question is, what does the commission think about that? Mm-hmm. Does the commission think that that number is correct, A, B, and then B, how do we handle exclusion and avoidance areas?
Okay. So this has come up previously in a couple cases, and so if I and Pat, you were kind of the lead on those. Could you remind us what we did in those cases?
Well, the one case I'm thinking of specifically, without naming the case, I guess, is was related to deviations from the designated route, the designated route identified by the GIS, which is the precise, you know, designated route. Deviations that were made to that, but we didn't have filings that are supposed to be made under the reprint law, mm-hmm. that would tell the commission that, yeah, we are deviating here. We're not going to impact any exclusion and avoidance areas because of the deviation. We talked about that. We, in a couple of cases, we had the company didn't file the paperwork for those deviations. And so we got to talking about, well, Does it mean if they deviate by 1 foot from the precise designated route, should they have to file under the reprint law or afterwards? Should they have to file right away? We talked about maybe they could have deviations under 20 feet, you know, under 20 feet from the designated route, and then file those all at the end, you know, list all those changes that they made and file them all at the end, and only have to file right away if they're exceeding that 20 feet. Or, I mean, the other option is that if you're talking about buffer, you should maybe think about whether you want them to file it. Should they file at all? Whether it be, you know, even at the end, should they still file at the end if it's under 20 feet deviation from the? And in here, this order, I think the proposed order was instead of 20 feet, it was 40 feet.
And okay. And did we settle on a number?
We did not.
Didn't we settle on a kind of a policy or not?
We did not. No, we did. We did acknowledge filings by a company. Or in fact, we had issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. Filings by the company. The company filed all their deviations that exceeded 20 feet from the center line or from the route, and the commission issued an order on those. But they didn't file for anything that was under the 20 feet. So I don't know if that's not really setting policy.
It seems like it sort of establishes something of a precedent.
It's established precedent, yep.
I feel like we settled on some course of action for this then. This is what the one thing that I just, like, struggle with so much is, like, we go through all this work to come up with solutions and then somehow we rethink it again.
Well, so there's that. And also, I'm a little frustrated. I feel like companies, you know, I think we treat pretty well trying to be responsive and make good, timely decisions and stuff. So continuously set us up to be the bad guys. You know, with the old system, it was, well, so if it's 1 foot, we have to do all this filing? And so we go on that one, you know, 20 feet. And now I sort of feel like we're left with, well, so if it's 21 feet, now we have, and now all of a sudden we're going to 40. You know, I feel like wherever we draw a line to give some flexibility, then it's taken to that extreme, and, well, so 1 foot again. And so pretty soon I think we're just going to be doing these in just some area of the state. And,
well,
seems like it's growing.
I could see, what does the law say about the actual route?
Reprint part of the law?
I'm just thinking, like, because we established this corridor, right? The 100-foot corridor, usually. And what is it, what's assumed that they can do within that 100-foot corridor?
So, route adjustments, there's 4922.115, which is route adjustments before, during construction for gas or liquid transmission line. And that, the case that Pat was talking about, that was the problem, is there's a route adjustments that were not done during the time of construction. They were discovered after, and the filings came in after. Basically, they're allowed, as long as it's, there's several sections, but the gist of every one of them starts with, before or during construction, a utility without any action by the commission may adjust the route of a gas or liquid transmission line within the designated corridor if, before conducting any construction activities associated with the adjustment, the utility files with the commission certification and supporting documentation that the construction activities will be within the design corridor and not affect any known exclusion or avoidance areas. So basically, I think what we're really trying to adjust here is a timing aspect of it, and that's based on some of the language that Adam's given me. And from what the company provided, they're kind of asking for a forgiveness zone of where they would not have to make any filings at all. So I guess that's what I'm hearing and where my train of thought is at. Am I in the right section that you're talking about?
Yes, that's the right.
Okay. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, four sections, and then section five in that one says the commission is not required to hold a public hearing or publish notice for any route adjustments under this section. So I guess if we're really looking to build a buffer in here, the company's language I don't think is real far off. But if you'd rather have it be 20 feet, then I guess our order would say 20 feet to both sides of the route. And I think the way they have theirs written, they would not have to file any sort of route adjustments at the end of it.
Right.
Now, if you look to the the sheet that Adam provided me, there's some struck-out language in yellow. It says, company is not required to file route adjustments under North Dakota Century Code 4922.115 for the route adjustments that are within 20 feet of the designated route until the pipeline is placed in service. Well, that language right there gives them the 20-foot buffer, but it's also requiring them to come back in at the end when it's placed into service and file those route adjustments with us for anything within 20 feet.
What is this struck-out language? Where did that come from?
I think that was just something Adam had come up.
But why is it struck out? Are you suggesting adding it? Using it or not using it, I guess. I'm confused.
I think Adam had come up with it, and then I think based on something that you had asked him, he had struck that and then went with what the underlined language is.
I see.
That's correct.
Okay, got it.
But well, with what's left, where does it say anything about 20 feet on each side or any other distance?
It doesn't. With the struck-out language, none of that's there. So we would have to, I guess depending on what you guys would like to do, I think that struck-out language is fairly close, and we can tweak it to either not require them to make any sort of filing after the fact on anything within 20 feet, or if you'd like for them to come back in afterwards and do the route adjustments after 20 feet, that just removes the timing requirement from 4922.115 from during construction to after construction.
Can you clarify for me, when you say not have to do anything after the fact, do you mean like a specific filing, like explaining the...
Right,
because we do get an as-built thing that will show where it ended up, right?
Correct.
So we have a record of it.
Right. So they basically wouldn't have to do the certifications and route adjustments for anything within 20 feet. So they wouldn't have to give us anything additionally at the end of the project.
Except the as-built.
Right. They would still have
that
to
would
provide
show that. That it...
They would still have to provide that. They just wouldn't have to certify the route adjustments.
And they wouldn't have to certify to that they're not impacting any exclusion or avoidance areas.
Why?
But I think if we took...
If they didn't have to file,
I don't like that part of it.
If they didn't have to file anything at the end, we wouldn't know anything about the adjustments or the route changes, except that when we got the as-built, we would see that there were some.
Well, but we could require them to file something. We could change that and add a requirement to... I don't even think they should be allowed to... Okay, first of all, they cannot affect an exclusion area.
Correct.
That's not allowed. So we can't even allow them to affect an exclusion area. We don't have that authority. So that has to be assumed or repeated or something. And then the second piece is if they're going to be affecting an avoidance area, we can't waive that requirement to let us know ahead of time because we have to deem that there's no reasonable alternative to that. So those kind of route changes affecting an avoidance area, those need to be pre-approved.
Sure.
And even if they happen within the buffer.
If we took that contingent on not affecting an exclusion or avoidance area, and I get what you're saying about the exclusion area, if we added that to the end of the language that is struck out there, basically that's them saying, They can do that as long as it doesn't impact an avoidance area. If it does impact an avoidance area, then they would be back to the strict language of 4922.1 where they would have to do it prior to doing that
prior
construction
to,
of the route adjustment.
Yep. They got to get approval before they can impact the avoidance area.
Right.
I mean, I just don't see, if we're going to allow them to go ahead and just impact avoidance areas, we've pretty much nullified the Siting Act.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I guess I wasn't thinking I was making a decision for anything so specific to the Senex case as opposed to what I would do in other cases. So I guess I've committed in my mind, I'm okay with that, like, 20-foot on each side buffer of not having all these extra filings as long as we get the as-builts when we're done. However, not when it affects an avoidance or an exclusion area.
Right.
That's an exception to it in my mind. This does not allow them to make, like, the 500 feet from a residence into a 480-foot buffer.
And I had thought of that, too, as we were kind of sitting here and I was looking through some of this stuff, too. And I don't think the company's, I don't think that's what they're looking for.
Right.
I think
they're looking for a little bit of a simplification so that when they encounter a huge rock or maybe existing infrastructure or something else that has to be shifted slightly, that they don't have to stop construction to make the certifications to us.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. So I'm comfortable with the 20 feet, but because of what you outlined earlier, Randy, with like 20, now it's 21, now it's 40, you know, I feel like in all of this, and this is probably a legislative change, not something that we can do, but we're kind of heading to designating a corridor for construction and not a route. Because the footprint or the footprint law already allows them, once the corridor is approved, to come in and put in a new line in that corridor without any siting. So why are we fussing about exactly where that line goes within the corridor when they can come in and build a whole new one anyway?
And you know, I think you are right that that's where this eventually leads to. But then some developer is going to end up suffering on that in some instances where they're trying to build something. And, you know, we had that one case, I don't remember what it is, where they couldn't hardly go one direction, but the other direction was a house, and they were just trying to thread that needle. Well, by building it right on a route that allowed them to have working room that was within 500 feet, but keep their pipeline 500 feet away. And if it's a corridor, they'd have to shift their whole corridor over, and that would have caused them a problem with whatever the issue was on the other side. And so pushing for that direction is going to cause a developer trouble sometime.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the direction that things are kind of heading.
It does.
And, so
especially because
issue
now
that warning that someday someone's going to end up with a problem because of it.
Well, that's not to say that there can't be, though, within the corridor exclusion avoidance areas. They just would have to follow the spelled out regime for impacting them.
I think there'll need to be another provision in there, like they can be built anywhere within the corridor except for within you know, whatever the various avoidance and exclusion areas.
Right.
I mean, it can be done.
If I'm the pipeline developers, I'm proposing this at the next legislative session, just because it gives them it. A, we're already going that direction with footprint law anyway, and it would give them a lot more flexibility to not have to come in with as-builts and stick to this line and do all this paperwork for moving within the corridor.
Yeah. I do hope, as they're planning that they will take the additional step and build in the provision to stay the correct distance from avoidance and exclusion areas so that we don't have to come down there and be amending.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see how they can do anything but that. I mean, that's pretty well spelled out in all of those deviation things.
It is, and I mean it is century code that does say before, during, or during construction, and we're kind of we are altering that or saying, oh, you don't really have to follow that. It can be after.
Within this buffer. We're creating the buffer.
So, I mean, that does give me a little bit of concern that we do have century code that does state what it is, and we are kind of circumventing that as far as route adjustments. It says in law before, during construction, and now we're saying, oh, after is okay.
I wish we had brought this up during the session.
It would have been a nice time to, this would have been a good one to change, because... I get where the company's coming from on that, especially when they're very, very minor changes. But
yeah.
At the same time, you know, that is something we should have addressed or could address in the future.
Well, I'm pretty comfortable with it based on the... the way the law, you know, is going with footprint and the reprint stuff. But we absolutely have to have the exclusion avoidance area language included.
I think so.
And I mean, how do we arrive at 40 feet? Like, I
don't know. That's what the company put in theirs. That's just their proposed
right
order.
And just with speaking with a company, I think that they would be okay with 20 feet as well.
All right. I mean, because it is a deviation from the strict reading of the law, I think we should try to be... as modest in that deviation as possible.
I agree. I mean, if you think about 20 feet, that's about the width probably of this room.
Yeah.
It's
on both sides.
You think, it's 20 feet, it's 20 feet. Well, when you think about what 20 feet is, and you're out and by other things or out in the world, it seems small, but it is, that's a pretty far deviation from, you know, what they had proposed. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's fairly generous.
It's not much when you're trying to construct and you run into obstacles. That's for sure.
Right.
However, if that landowner has something that they had intended for something adjacent to it, having it move 20 feet and then that being an obstacle to what they want to do ends up being a pretty big deviation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a reasonable amount.
Yeah.
And following up on that, I was thinking it would be important to tell when you go out to the hearings, you know, to tell if we adopt this as our kind of our policy now, when you're out at the hearings, it's important to tell the landowners, you know, they're going to be able to deviate from this route without coming to the commission unless there's an avoidance or exclusion area.
That's true, although in the past they almost have been, because I don't think we've denied very many of these route deviations when they file them in advance, and we don't go have a hearing or notify the landowner or anything like that, so it's kind of happened in the past anyway,
true.
But I think you're right, it is something that we probably want to start talking about.
Because there wasn't a notice of opportunity for hearing required on route changes.
Right.
That didn't affect anything. Plus, I would assume that they have in their easement language some pretty significant buffers from the pipe, which would extend it, you know, more if it's deviating from what they were drawing on a map. But
we don't get to see easements, but, you know, possibly in the easement they can construct with it within whatever they had drawn on the map as a construction right-of-way.
Yeah.
They might be able to. I'm not sure. Yeah, because we don't see the easements, but.
True. Okay, so we're going with 20. and you're going to – can does somebody have – like, Brian, do you have what the language is going to read?
I don't have anything official, but if I go with the document that Adam provided with the highlighted yellow portion, I think if we – if that was unstruck, something to language like company is not required to file route adjustments under North Dakota Century Code 4922.115 for route adjustments that are within 20 feet of the designated route contingent on not affecting an exclusion or avoidance area. I know you can't affect an exclusion area, but I don't think it really hurts to have that in there. Sure. Just as a reminder. I think that's important language.
Yeah. All right. I think that works. Randy, you good with that? We can look at it once they get
I think so, yes.
Okay. Was there anything else on this order that needed to be discussed today?
I did have one other thing quick.
Sure.
I thought I seen in here that they had their conditional use permit from the county. But maybe I was thinking when I read that of the weed board one. But anyway, here's my point to it, whether it is or not. Mr. Stamp testified, and here this is according to my notes, at least, mm-hmm. that they will get the conditional use permit before starting construction. Later on, Kurt, the Planning and Zoning Board, requested that they paint their above-ground stuff in earth tones and have their lights pointed downward. Do we know, did the company ever commit to doing those things? Or is that just strictly between them and the county permit? Or
I wasn't at the hearing. So.
Maybe you can check up on that, Adam.
We can follow up on that. I can follow up on that.
Would sure be nice to
so
the county.
So to be clear, when he was talking about painting the associated facilities earth tone as well as
the above ground.
The above ground. The lighting should be faced downward, as I recall in the hearing. Those two items?
Yeah.
Okay. I can follow up with that. Yep.
He also said something about emergency response plans being... but I didn't write down specific. I just wrote emergency response plans.
Because McKenzie does require a conditional use permit.
Well, they can't anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, so
that was the issue.
So that isn't really an issue. Okay. Anything else?
No.
All right. So we'll wrap this up and try to get it on the next meeting. Or is the company, because do we have a bigger break between our meetings this month? No. The 19th, I think we have one. Regardless, if the company's eager to get this done, I'm open to having a special meeting. Okay. Recognizing that.
We can follow up as well with that and find out timing.
Okay.
I understand that there may be a special meeting for some other reason.
Okay.
So we might already be working on it.
It'll be a multi-agenda special meeting.
You mean a special meeting to approve an order?
Yeah.
Or to have another work session?
No, to approve an order.
I don't think these details require another work session.
Good. I agree. Yeah. I think just to approve it. If the company's eager to get constructing, since it is construction season.
There's been no indication from staff side about that.
Okay. All right, so you'll check on that, get the draft, get these changes made, and check on how they're responding to the county's requests. Even though they don't need a conditional use permit, it would be nice to be assured that they are going to honor those pretty modest requests.
Right. Yeah, I remember that in the hearing as well.
All right. Okay. So looks like we're all good. Thanks, everybody. The work session on 20-430 is concluded. Have a great weekend.